Okay, great. So thank you everyone for joining us. It's just about 5 o'clock here on Thursday, April 18th. And this is Dr. Will Tuttle. We are going now live on our World Peace Diet third Thursday of the month, World Peace Diet Circle. And we will be glad to, those of you who, I think everybody's been here before, but it's at the maximum 90 minutes we get to share some time together and talk about the issues. And, oh, look at this. We got Davi is just joining us all the way from England. We've got, well, so many time zones. I think Susan Daytree in Hawaii is at 2 p.m. afternoon. And I think for Davi, it's about 2 a.m. in England. So we got the whole planet here. That's great. All right, so I'll go ahead and just to let everybody know, you can probably see we are back in California, and get started. So I'm sitting right at the piano, and we like to have a meditation just to start our time off. People are just joining us here from all around. And so feel free, it's probably good, it's best if you're muted. So if you're not muted, please mute yourself just for the meditation, for the conversation, unless you'd like to say something to keep the extraneous noise. And I'm really happy that we can have this every third Thursday, because there's so many things happening in the outer world that really need our attention and awareness. And sharing, I think, to try to have discernment and clarity. I also have actually some good news. Yesterday, the new book, Food for Freedom, went live on Amazon Kindle. So it's up. You can read it, as of today. So it's there. And, the print version is, on the way. I'll be getting a copy that I can, proof. In a few days.
Congratulations.
And if that looks good, then we'll go ahead and that'll be ready too. So we'll talk about that later maybe, but I did want to let everybody know the good news of the new book, which is a pretty big book. I think it's about 370 pages, is now on Kindle. And you can just go, just look Food for Freedom and you'll find it there, so you can start reading. All right, if you'd like. So but let's go ahead and start our meditation. I'm really happy that we can join in. So let's go ahead and turn our attention within. I'm sitting here at Yuma, our wonderful grand piano. Become aware of our breathing. Allowing ourselves to enter more deeply together into this present moment. Allowing ourselves to relax and to let go. Letting go of any thoughts of the past, of the future. Entering into the beauty, the infinite expanse of this present moment, where we dwell always in freedom, in truth, in harmony, in gratitude, in a sense of kindness and benevolence, and empathy and compassion for all of our brothers and sisters of all species. Breathing together. Give thanks for all of our teachers, everyone in our life who has helped us to awaken more fully to the truth that we are. And sometimes these teachers may seem like opponents. You give thanks for all of the experiences we've had. They have brought us to right where we are now, which is the perfect unfoldment of awareness in this mission that we have in this lifetime. We give thanks for all of the colleagues and co-workers of all times and places, the whole community of caring beings. Working together to help share the message of compassion and kindness, of inclusion, of the interconnectedness of all life, to deepen our spiritual awareness of the one source shining through every manifestation of life. We give thanks especially to the beings we refer to as animals and see them now fully opening to freedom and liberation, seeing human beings, humanity, opening to liberating all the animals, liberating ourselves and each other from the delusion of separateness, from the delusion of oppression and violence. From the delusion of exploitation, realizing the joy that shines always at the very core of our being, that needs no reasons in the outer world. And we see this physical vehicle, this physical body that we are functioning through, as whole and complete, as filled with vitality, wisdom, awareness, peace and harmony, our hearts and all of our organs, radiating life, purpose, so that we, the infinite spiritual being, who is never born and will never die, can continue every day unfolding our inner wisdom for the benefit of all living beings. that we are part of the awakening of humanity. And we give thanks for the power that we have to distinguish between the false appearances and to abide always in a state of peace and harmony, understanding our true nature as eternal consciousness, that is of the nature of loving kindness, creativity, and freedom. And so we enter now more deeply into our true home, the home of loving kindness. With every exhalation, we radiate love in all directions, breathing and radiating love into the infinite web of relations. May all beings be happy and at peace. May all beings have all of the causes of happiness, abiding in our true home of loving kindness. Abiding in our true home of compassion, with every exhalation radiating compassion naturally and spontaneously, filling the whole world with compassion, knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings. With every exhalation radiating the heart of compassion, which fills our own heart, as the yearning to act, to relieve the suffering of others, to awaken to the truth, so that we may be of more skillful service in the awakening of compassion in the heart of humanity. With every exhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the great joy that shines always at the very center of our being, radiating joy. May all beings remember the basic joy of living, of being. Abiding in our true home of joy, breathing and radiating joy, and entering now finally into our true home of peace. with every exhalation, radiating peace and harmony to all living beings. May all be at peace. May we all realize the original brightness of our minds, of our hearts, of our true nature. Abiding in the great peace. And so we begin to wrap up our meditation time together, abiding in our true home, abiding in love, in compassion, in joy, and in peace. And so we see the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace and love, compassion and freedom. The great cleansing is taking place every day within our own hearts and within our own mind. Thank you, everyone,
again,
for joining us and for participating in our meditation time. So, as you all know, if you've been here before, which most of you have, I think, this is our time. This is our 1.5 hours in the month where we're together and focus really on the underlying message that combines veganism, ahimsa, nonviolence with spirituality, which they are totally connected, but to really consciously delve into that. And in whatever ways you feel would be helpful to you. So before we go too far, I'd like to just say that at the beginning, if you feel like you have a pressing question or something you'd like to share with the group or something that's bothering you specifically, that's come up over the last month or the last couple of weeks. We were together for the first Thursday for our meditation time, but we try to avoid a whole lot of us mainly focusing on spiritual. This is more open. So if anyone has anything, just raise your hand, just wave or push down there. I think it's in the at the bottom of the screen if you're on your computer, or you can press, I think it's *6 if you're on your phone. And just unmute yourself and let me know, or let us know what you'd like to talk about. And for us, in the meantime, there's plenty that's been happening. I just want to say, I also sent out today an email just to the general list that we have just about our tour, which I really think went very well. And so we're very grateful to so many people. I mean, we did more events than I think we've ever done on one of these tours. We did over 100 events. And it was, a lot of organizing. on our part, but a lot of organizing on other people's part. They had to, you know, put the word out and get the people to come and all that. So, it was, all in all, it went great. We really had some wonderful experiences and met lots of fantastic people. And the whole idea is to beat the vegan drum, you know, just send the message out there. And I think the more we do that in our own ways, however we feel like doing it, I think, it encourages everyone to continue to do that, or however we do it. And it does, I think, make a difference. You know, like we were, for example, just one of the last stops we had was in Fresno, California. And it was interesting because about 10 months ago, we went down to Phoenix on a short little tour. Supreme Master Ching Hai had a special event down there, on the launch of her new book. And so she asked if I could come and give a talk, and they televised it to their whole channel. And so it was really quite an event. They do things very, with lots of flair, and, you know, had quite a few people there. Stylish Rao was there, and Baxter Montgomery, and Jane Velez Mitchell, and a whole bunch of people. You know, Keegan Kuhn, I think. So we drove down in our little van, and so on the way we stopped in Fresno, and also in Palm Springs and a few other places, and did some talks. And in this Fresno group, there was just one woman there, and she did her best to kind of get some people to come to the Unitarian Church, and I gave a talk. And so on the way back, she kind of sent me an email and said, it would be great if you could come back again. You know, it's been just less than a year, so sometimes that's kind of a short notice. But we went back, and we had a nice gathering there. But it was kind of nice because she told me that event that we had at the Unitarian Church started up a vegan group in Fresno. You know, our talk started a new group. There hadn't been any vegan group really in Fresno. And that every month since then, they had been meeting and having potlucks and having meetings and promoting veganism, getting more and more people involved. You know, so I think, you know, the whole idea, the reason Madeline and I do what we do, I think the main reason going around in this kind of local grassroots way, is to try to encourage local groups to gather and share the message, however they like to do that. I think, you know, face-to-face gatherings are great. It's nice we can do this by Zoom too. But we really feel that it's important to keep that connection alive so that we know the people in our area physically and we can get together and talk about the issues and share recipes and have social time together and also educate ourselves more and more about the issues, because things are always changing and the vegan movement is being challenged in all kinds of ways. And I think it's good for us to be aware of all that. So that was, I think, one of the great things that we always have felt. And it's been quite challenging, I guess, you know, since COVID, just things are more difficult. Everything seems to be a little more difficult in general in terms of getting people to work together and come together and leave their houses and go out and do things. But, you know, I think it's good to just make the effort. And so we're very grateful that it went so well. We could do so many events. We worked a lot also through the Unity churches. Most Sundays we did something at Unity and a workshop on developing intuition. We did some concerts too, which was nice, just full concerts. And and then we had a great time, as Lisa Wong remembers, at the Hippocrates Health Institute. And you all know about that. So we were there for 2 months and did some talks at the big fruit festival they had, also down in south of Miami. So it's been it was a great 5 months living in our little tiny van. I kind of joke that it's, you know, it's only the size of our van, the living space is 5 feet wide by 7 feet long by 39 inches high. And so it's, the joke is we're learning what it's like to have more compassion for factory farmed animals who don't have much space, you know. But luckily for me, it's great. I have a really beautiful partner that I can get close to, so I don't mind it at all. So, but our little van, it's really fantastic. You know, we had this big RV for 17 years. That was also great, but we don't need it anymore. So traveling in a small thing, and then coming back here and just seeing the garden, just, you know, we had to really roll up our sleeves and get to work right away, pulling weeds and things, but it did great. We had so much rain here in Northern California, so we have a huge amount of chard and kale and celery and fennel, and then there's something called miner's lettuce, which is just volunteers, but it's really delicious. We have a lot of miner's lettuce, too. And then all the fruit trees are blossoming. They're setting fruits. We can see there's going to be a lot of cherries and nectarines and figs. And we have a tree full of grapefruits, kumquats, and lemons, oranges are coming. So things are coming. So, you know, that's the beautiful thing, I think, really about nature, is that if we can cooperate with the abundance and harmony of the natural world, we can easily feed ourselves and feed everyone. It's just a matter of learning and doing and supporting each other and doing that. So we'll see what the future brings for this year. You know, 2024 seems to be already quite a year of a lot of challenges, a lot of changes, a lot of things happening that I think are on both sides. But the most important thing, from my point of view, is that we keep our eye on the ball and really remember the importance of veganism or animal liberation as the most important underlying dynamic in the situations that we have unfolding. And that's really what the new book, Food for Freedom, focuses on. And I think we'll see how it goes. It's going to be, I think, a lot of people will like it because it's the only book that really brings those two messages together, I think, in a coherent way that I've seen, the vegan message and the message of human freedom and questioning the globalist agenda that's in many ways, I think, trying to turn human beings into livestock the way we turn cows and pigs and chickens into livestock. You know, just seeing, we see them as commodities to be bought and sold, and reduce them in our mind to mere objects. And, of course, when we do that, we sow the seeds for the same thing to happen to us. And so we've been talking about, you know, let's not do that, everybody, but we're still doing it. We have a massive food system of violence that's growing in many ways. And so crazy things are happening. And we have to be careful. I mean, I think, you know, the whole central bank digital currency keeps moving forward, trying to create a system where we're always tracked. And this tracking, you know, thing, I think we have to be careful of that. We've been warning for 30 years that if we're going to insist on microchipping and tracking animals, then that's like slavery for them, and it could be the same thing for us. So I'm more and more feeling the importance of freeing myself from technology. It's hard to do. I mean, we're so dependent on it. But I can see it's got this really dark side of you can easily control a lot of people. You know, a few people can control a lot of people with technology and with money together. So just like we do, right? With cows and pigs, you can have, you know, 5,000 chickens in some kind of a shed, and one guy, you know, kind of takes care of the whole thing. So we have to be aware that our freedom is up to us. We are responsible for our own freedom. And a lot of it is health freedom, because if we don't have our health, then in many ways we don't have our freedom. And so that's, I think, where the main attack is to try to erode our health, try to erode our physical health, our psychological health, and our cultural health, and environmental health. They're all connected. And our spiritual health, right? Those are the five dimensions of health that I talk about quite a bit in both the World Peace Diet and especially in the new book. And by really being proactive, each one of us, in absolutely defending our health, we have to really defend it. We have to proactively defend our health, because there are incredibly powerful forces that want to erode and destroy our health. Because when you don't have health, you know, you're basically, that's it. right? I mean, you easily become a slave. So we have to understand that. And so the medical industry, the media, the educational establishment, the governmental agencies, they've all been captured, basically, at this point. So it's essential for us now to maybe that big system, we talk about it, you know, that whole, I call it the military, industrial, medical, pharmaceutical, media, banking complex, that massive, powerful complex that concentrates wealth in the hands of a tiny percentage of people. If that could, that's very delicate. The whole thing is very delicate. And if it goes down, we're going to be on our own more and more, perhaps. So anyway, so I think, you know, anything we can do to be more self-reliant for food, for energy, and for money, and for all those things, or at least means of exchange, I guess is a better way of saying it, trading and bartering and things like that. Farmers markets are great, and veganic gardening, and all these things. Because these are times, I think, where you know, when an empire gets really big and powerful, then it goes into the stage of decay, then all kinds of stuff happens. And I think that's what we can see happening. It's moving into that stage. And that happens in nature, too. Everything has a growth period, it has a blossoming, and then it has a decay where it's recycled again into something else, and we're born during this time, and underlying everything is the key thing to understand is this grand deception that we need to imprison millions of animals and kill them for food to be healthy, to get the nutrients that we need to be healthy. So anything we can do to free ourselves from that and help other people free themselves from that, I think that's the most important thing, because whatever we sow, we reap. If you wanted, and I think essentially, I hope everyone who's on the call here, if you don't mind, my plan is, right now, I just want to mention this, and I'll get to you, Susan, in a second. Thanks for raising your hand. The Kindle version of the new book, Food for Freedom, is available for $9.50. And so Madeline and I are talking about it. We think the best thing to do is to drop the price to half price, so $4.75 for a couple of weeks. And just encourage everyone who's part of the World Peace Diet community, who's maybe interested in this new book, to please get it, you know, just buy it, because we really need to get the whole, Amazon algorithm to kick in that people are interested in this book. And so if you could just buy one of those Kindle versions, that'll make it more likely that Amazon will recommend this book to other people who are buying things that are sort of similar, maybe have to do with veganism, or have to do with health freedom, or have to do with environmentalism, or have to do with social philosophy, or anything. They might recommend this book if people are buying it. And then also, besides that, if you could leave a review, that's really helpful too, because getting some reviews, it has zero review, it has nothing, it's just up, it's just total virgin little thing sitting there with a totally empty page. So it would be nice to get some reviews and get some people buying. So I'll go ahead and do that tonight. After the call, I'll drop the price down to half price, to $4.75, and then if you guys can do that, and maybe tell your friends if you know anybody who'd be interested, and I'll put it out maybe in a few days also to the larger list. We'll do that for a couple of weeks, and then that'll help get the momentum going. You know, I'm not a marketing person, but I know there's certain things that are helpful to do. So I think this would be good to get the message out, because I think our society really needs to understand this. If we are going to continue to insist on enslaving animals, we're just sowing the seeds for it to happen to us. And it seems like that is not being really addressed skillfully at all anywhere. So hopefully we can fill that gap and start a conversation going, and we'll see where it goes. Judy Carman keeps saying, we're going to get you on Dell Big Tree, which I think it would be great, but he's a big meat eater. But we know his brother, his brother's the CEO of Unity, and he's a vegan, and we'll see what happens about that. But it's one of those things. It seems like everybody who's really interested in freedom wants to enslave animals. You know, they don't seem to make the connection. So we have a lot of work to do. But what else is there to do? You know, we're here on this earth, and we've got to do something. So, all right. So I'll go ahead, and Susan, feel free to, can you unmute yourself there? You have a comment or a question? I don't hear you. Okay, now. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. This is so exciting. I wanted to say two things now. One is that, I met this vegan man, and he told me one of his two favorite books. Unfortunately, he didn't. Then it's not the world he's dying, but it's 1984. So I'm listening. You know, I read it when I was in high school or something, but I'm listening it to now on Audible. And I just was thinking of asking you, you know, how did they know? I mean, I don't know. You may know what year that book was written. It was like maybe the 1950s, Will. I don't know. But when was it written? But how did it wasn't written in 1984. It was written a long time ago. And I don't know how they knew so much back then about what it's like now and, you know, how we're moving in this direction of Big Brother and us, and people becoming less like people. And, you know, they all just love Big Brother. And, you know, so you all know a lot of you, most people know that book. But anyway, the second thing is that, you know, I am an RFK Jr. supporter. It's amazing how many people in Hawaii for sure don't know about him running for president. But I just was thinking while you were talking that I did go to that private event of his where food was there, and I'd like to tell everybody there was minimal amount of animal food. There was a lot of vegetables with everything, and but he is not a vegan, and you know, Bill Bigtree is his communications manager or something right now, but you know. So, but I'm not worried. I can't worry about that with him. I'm just like so hopeful because you know how he is speaking about out for our freedom and the destruction of our government. So that's it.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks, Susan. You know, I think the book 1984 was written, I believe, in 1949, and. It, you know, I read it in the 60s, when I was just a early teens, I guess, something like that. And I remember in the early 60s, 1984 seemed way, way out in the future, you know, far in the future, 1984, like far, far away. And
wow.
So when I read the book, it was very, impactful. I never read it again. I mean, I remember it so clearly. I feel like I just read it yesterday. It's amazing. I was only probably 13 years old. Now I'm 70, so it's like all these years ago, but it really made a big impact on me. And I think in a way, I know what you mean, but it seems prophetic. The thing is interesting, maybe about 20 years ago or so, the Library Association of America voted on the best book, the most important book of the 20th century. And they said it was Brave New World. And so then I read Brave New World also. And to me, those two books, they have really two, they're both dystopian novels. They both have a very different kind of approach to what the future will look like if we continue on the trajectory that we're on. They're similar in the sense that humanity is enslaved by these forces that have taken control, that use technology and our human nature, I guess, to enslave us. And one of the ways, like 1984, it's more brutal. It's more like just sheer domination in many ways and control of narratives. It's really about control of narratives. And that's always been a big deal. So I don't think it was that hard to predict, but these, both of these people, George Orwell, he has another name, that's his pen name, but George Orwell and, Brave New World, the author, I know who it is, I can think of it right now, but anyway, Aldous Huxley. They were both, very intelligent, but also I think just seeing the trajectory of the way things are going. And Aldous Huxley, it's really interesting to listen to some of the interviews that he's done, that he did way back in the 1950s. And he could see, I think, quite clearly, that technology could be used and the way that, subliminals have been used and so forth, to make us love our slavery. You know, that was his idea, that we won't have to be pushed into it with violence. We have this tendency to just, like, yearn for it somehow. It's like, it's kind of interesting, you know. So the whole idea, I think, and I talk about that somewhat in the Food for Freedom book, the Stanley Milgram experiments, the Solomon Asch experiments. You know, these are really interesting experiments that show how driven we seem to be the same as everyone else in the group, right? The Solomon Asch experience, you all know those, where people say the line is the same, you know, it's obviously a shorter line, but everybody else said it was longer, so okay, I'll say it was longer too. We just kind of go along. It's that groupthink idea. And this seems, it's very interesting how, you know, 80 or 90% of people will just go along with whatever the group thinks. And the Milgram experiments focus more on not so much group, but on an alpha male or an authority figure that when you have, especially a scientist, you know, it's like a high priest. If a scientist tells you to do something, then you just do it, you know, and even if it means shocking a friendly person, you know, almost to death, you just do it because it's science, right? Or it's what the scientific authority tells you to do. And so, you know, these are deeply disturbing findings, but it points and that's, I think, really what drove Aldous Huxley, you know, this awareness, some of these things, and also seeing the way television and radio were, you know, moving more and more of a mass consciousness. So if you look at those things, and then also the work that was done by this guy, everybody, I think of his name right now, but he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. He kind of invented marketing and public relations. And I'll think of his name in a minute. But anyway, he really managed all kinds of public relations campaigns that were very successful. And so he really, I think, got the super wealthy people to understand that it's not that difficult to control, for a few people to control everyone through television and through mass media. You can control the narratives. Controlling the narratives controls what people think about their situation, then you've got them. You've got them controlled, and you can tell them how to think and what to live and what makes you happy and so forth. And so when I was a kid, I think it was moving in that direction, but quite honestly, it seems to me that the system, it's gone forward quite a bit, it seems to me. I mean, it seems like, with, computers phones and so forth, that we're more plugged in than ever. And it's just kind of ironic. You know, we thought, I think for a while perhaps, that you know, computers and everything would liberate us, that we'd all have this democratization of information and everybody, we could connect with each other and create a whole global village based on equality and justice and freedom and sharing information, and the technology would be our great savior. And it turns out, I think, at this point anyway, technology is definitely not our savior. And it's just too easy for wealth to be concentrated by technology. That's what's been happening. It's concentrating more and more and more every year. And that wealth translates directly into power, because it translates directly into narrative control and into control of governmental agencies. And when you control governmental agencies and media and narratives and education, then, you know, there's this, to me, unfortunately, a dark side to it that sees human beings as objects and tries to get us to see ourselves that way. So that's why the spiritual dimension is so important, that we realize this. And I think Aldous Huxley, he had a strong spiritual orientation, and I think he was trying to help us, you know, warn us, but also encourage us to do the efforts we have to do as individuals to get out of the box, to break out of the box of our cultural conditioning. Some of his other writings go strongly in that direction. So it's fascinating stuff, and I think there's so much, you know, each one of us can contribute, but the most important thing really is the work that we do on our own consciousness, that we learn to find our own inner guidance system, our own intuitive awareness and wisdom, so we just don't fall into the trap of believing what everybody thinks. You know, I'm sure I'm going to catch quite a lot of flack, probably, maybe, I don't know, we'll see. But, with the World Peace Diet, it was just the whole vegan community loved it because it's really promoting veganism. And with this new book, Food for Freedom, it's really promoting veganism, but I'm also promoting health freedom and questioning some of the really cherished ideas within the vegan community that I think are not true. And especially like climate change and some of these things, that's a big one.
That's a big one.
we can't just go along with things that are being used to enslave us. And to be able to understand, be able to look beyond the surface of things to the deeper structure of what's actually happening is an important part of it. And to question the medical establishment also. So
if I could just interject.
Oh, Christy, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so many thoughts. I reread both those books, 1984 and A Brave New World. Early on in the COVID years, like in 2020.
Uh-huh.
And boy, did they really hit me hard at that time. Like the two of them basically to me kind of summarized everything that was happening. And, you know, 1984 describes this more external form of control, which I feel like is really happening, especially with digital media, because now, you know, Amazon and these tech companies, they have the capability to rewrite history, you know, to ban books and to retroactively change books. Like they can do that, and they have done that. So there's that. And then A Brave New World is more the internalized form of control. And even like Noam Chomsky had co-authored the book Manufactured Consent, which basically was about that, you know, same concept about how there's not going to need to be an external control because we're going to have internalized, you know, the control and our consent has been manufactured. So we're not even going to complain. But on the subject of all of these things, Will, I know you're familiar with Derek Brose, but I had him, I just interviewed him on the Vegan Posse podcast, and that interview is going to be coming out at midnight tonight. So it'll be available tomorrow. And
he's
really big on, you know, food and freedom and just like, you know, I think he really does a good job of just illuminating, you know, he calls them the systems of slavery. You know, there's the obvious one with the non-human animals, but then, you know, just the wider ramifications of that. And he's really, you know, such an interesting guy because he's really opted out of so many of the systems. He doesn't even have a bank account, you know? And, you know, I know I'm not there. I'm not that to that level, but, you know, I just love talking to people like him who just really are like pushing the limits and just, you know, saying like, well, if I don't believe in this system, I'm going to do everything I can not to participate in it. And then the last thing I'll mention is, yeah, I don't want to get too much. I'm so over politics and stuff, but Yeah, I love how RFK Jr., you know, actually called out Fauci, and I thought his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, was fascinating. For me, just learning about the whole AIDS debacle, I didn't know I hadn't gone down that rabbit hole, and boy, was that illuminating. It's extremely frustrating to me to hear RFK Jr. talk about how one of his number one goals for his presidency is for, you know, Americans to be healthier, and that he'll consider his presidency a failure if, you know, at the end of 4 years, people aren't healthier. And then in the next breath, he's talking about how meat and eggs and dairy are too expensive and how we need to, you know, subsidize those farmers and make sure that people can get there. You know, so it's just like, I hear that stuff, and I know his links to animal ag are no surprise to anybody, but it's just, you know, it's you know, like you said, well, you know, we've got our work cut out for us.
Well, he can possibly win, and he can do a lot of good that nobody else of the other choices would be of any inclination to do. But anyway, you know, I would like to say that since I still remained unmuted, that, you know, you mentioned those two books said it all, Chrissy. But, you know, now we have a book that's nonfiction that is telling it all, because those were novels. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, right. I mean, a nonfiction book like Food for Freedom is, it's got it just that way. And that's powerful. Although I have to say, we human beings seem to process information better through a story than through just having it told to us in a certain way. You know, some of the most powerful books like Uncle Tom's Cabin and, you know, and some of these other ones that really like started huge movements were novels that kind of encapsulated the, these ideas. So, but nonfiction's, you know, is important too. So thanks. That's good. And yeah, I know it's really great. I think, I mean, I'm very inspired to, quite honestly, to see, RFK Jr., doing as well as he's doing and having the courage, because I just feel like, you know, he's really, kind of, you know, poking, them in the eye. And I don't know, I think it's great that, you know, he's being willing. I mean, no candidate is perfect, but at least, it's nice to have this refreshing, quite refreshing, alternative. So, good. Yeah, no, I think it's good. And, you know, his years and years and years and years and years of work to try to protect the environment is so heartening. And he understands that, and protect children. So, you know, I think those are such important things, and protect our freedoms. So, and being healthy. Now, one of the things, I read his book, it's called American Values, that one he wrote about his life growing up, in the family. And he talks a lot about his uncle, John F. Kennedy, and Kennedy's one of his main goals was to get Americans into shape. You know, how he wanted everyone to be able to do a 50-mile march. And he called on every American to do a 50-mile march to show you're in shape. I mean, I don't think anyone can do it. I mean, that was in 1961, and now here it is, like, what, 60 years later. I mean, I think most people can't even do, like, you know, a two-block march before they fall down, collapse. You know, it's really amazing how the health of the American people has just disintegrated to such an incredible degree, how much dependence there is on the pharmaceutical industry for medications, and how chronic disease has gone from, it was only 5% back in the 60s, it's now up to 70%. We have chronic disease. I mean, people are on medications the rest of their life. Now, this is really unbelievable. I mean, the loss of health is the loss of freedom. And so we really need to understand this and don't, you know, take away our health from establishment and take responsibility for it, for ourselves. And that means spiritual health as well. So, there's very powerful forces that are, trying to undermine our health. And I think, you know, at least Kennedy, and Trump too, both of them, I mean, they're standing up to it, and they're both getting attacked. They're an interesting thing, but Yes, Gino.
Hey, Will. Just a few notes here and there through this conversation. As far as RFK Jr., he, in spite of his, you know, being down on the pandemic and everything, which was appreciated, he still believes in germ theory. And he also still believes in vaccines. Not the COVID vaccine, but other vaccines. So in other words, all these children that are getting 20 vaccines out of the womb, I exaggerate, but that's okay with him.
I don't think so, Gino.
Well, he wants them to be tested. He wants to have testing done. You know, he does make a big deal about the fact that all these vaccines have never been tested against a placebo. So there's never been real trials done. So, you know, it's hard to say, but I know what you're saying. He says he's very careful to say, I'm not anti-vax. I just want safe vaccines.
Right. So, I mean, if we want to evolve in this world, you know, our politicians, I don't think they're ever going to be able to do it because, you know, in many ways, they're not doing the inner work either that you're talking about.
You should listen to his thing about spirituality and how he got sober and how he cares about God and why he makes his bed in the morning because he cares about people. Well, I'm getting off subject, but I disagree apparently.
Anyway, go ahead, Gino. I understand what you're saying.
All right. Let me try a different subject. you know, we're always talking about, you know, these spiritual leaders. We find out that they're not vegan, or all these different celebrities, we find out they're no longer vegan or they never were, etc.
Right.
And a friend of mine was telling me about Jane Goodall, which I've always known she's not fully vegan. And then he sent me this video of Jon Stewart interviewing Jane Goodall. And they got on that subject and he asked her, well, how are you, you know, often attacked by vegans and everything for not being fully vegan? She says, yeah, I see it all the time. She says, you know, we live in an extreme world and extreme people are out there. No. We're getting labeled extreme again. And then John said, you know, I understand that. He says, you know, I don't see anything wrong with occasionally having a cheeseburger. I mean, I don't eat a lot of meat, but I mean, once in a while, it's okay. So that floored me more than Jane Goodall because his wife is a vegan. His wife got him to, you know, build this animal sanctuary and everything. I mean, I really like him when I watch him on TV. He's just so bright and everything. But he reminded me then once again of these spiritual leaders that disappoint. You know, he also does the same thing. And I don't know that disconnect, how that is still happening for him, especially. I just had to put out there. So we still have this to put up with. I'm just kvetching.
Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that interview, but I have to say that is very disturbing because I thought he was really a vegan. And to just kind of, to me, to say that publicly really undercuts the whole vegan message in a very powerful way. You know, these people, because it makes it sound like, well, we can, you know, what the heck? I mean, you can abandon your values if it's not convenient, right? It's just not convenient right now, so I'm going to, I don't care anymore. I don't see how that, but on the other hand, maybe that's why he is a famous celebrity, because he's willing to do that. I mean, you know, I think that's part of it.
He was terrible on COVID. I mean,
pardon me?
He was terrible on the COVID issue.
Yeah.
On freedom.
Is that right?
He was horrible. And I'm not super surprised about his not being fully vegan, just because I always had the impression that it was his wife, you know, who was the truly ethical vegan. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, in some ways, I find it even more painful when people like Jane Goodall or like Albert Schweitzer are not fully vegan. Because if these really, really smart, really spiritual, you know, seemingly ethical people, if even they aren't fully vegan, then it's kind of, you know, sometimes I feel like, my goodness, what hope do we even have for, you know, humanity? But it's, Yeah.
Well, I think with some of the old timers like Schweitzer and Gandhi and stuff, I think I'm a little, you know, understanding, because they wasn't quite as aware. Although Gandhi really was vegan quite a long, many, many years. He wouldn't do dairy. He looked into it. But I think you're right. Nowadays, when there's so much awareness of the violence in dairy
right.
products, it really is interesting, though. I think, you know, I mean, one of the things I talk about in the new book is that veganism is the most disturbing movement to the globalist agenda. I mean, it's you know, liberating animals and it's really liberating ourselves. And so, I think there's a massive attack on the integrity of the vegan movement. It's been going on for a long time. And this is just another example of it. It's like getting people to into the media to make it sound like it's extreme, and having Jane Goodall, you know, they just promote her, right? But it's very carefully done. She cares about chimpanzees. She doesn't care about cows and pigs and chickens. You know, she cares about these exotic animals, and she talks about veganism being very extreme, which means, you know, very anti-rational, kind of, you know, kind of a quirk, kind of these quirky people, you know, who actually live according to a compassion. And really, I mean, we're just as healthy or probably a lot healthier than the average people. So the whole veganism is enormously threatening. It's the most threatening thing. I think the most threatening movement that there is. And so we just have to be aware of that, and be aware that there's enormous pressures all the time to dilute the message and to get us divided, you know, and it's worked very well. I mean, the movement is pretty divided. The medical thing divided us a lot. Climate change, they do all kinds of things to get us to use lies to promote something good. You know, we shouldn't use a lie to promote something that's truth. We have to use truth. So all these things, I think, we need to be savvy about all these things happening, and it's important to talk about it, you know, really. And I'm not sure what the solution is, except to just, you know, those of us who understand, then to keep saying these things. And actually, Gino, I appreciate your bringing up that idea, because this is another very controversial subject, but the more I've looked into it, I have to agree that the germ theory is really a slave system, that we have to absolutely call it out as being completely a product of a tyrannical mindset that functions under animal agriculture. I mean, it's a product of animal agriculture and the type of science based on domination and exploitation of animals and human beings. That created the germ theory, that we're surrounded by billions and trillions of dangerous, terrible germs that are always trying to attack us and harm us. So, you know, I mean, that theory, that you tell that to children and have that going out all the time, this idea of contagion, really, if you want to enslave people, that's the number one best way to enslave people. Because it makes everybody inherently afraid of everybody else. Oh, you're going to give me something, you know. And this idea that we're going to spread these diseases to each other, and that there's these invisible, like, viruses. And it's so interesting. I just love the work of Mark and Samantha Bailey and a lot of the other researchers who have really questioned Stefan Lanka and all these people, Thomas Cohen. They've really shown that the whole science of virology it really is a creation of the Rockefeller medical establishment to create a pharmaceutical industry to make a lot of money and to keep everybody medicated. You know, we have to really understand that, because now look what's happening with this bird flu thing. I mean, that right there could be. I mean, you know, if people believe in viruses, that there's actually these terrible little things that are going to make you sick. If you believe that nonsense, then suddenly we have, now they're talking about vaccinating 13 billion chickens, right? I mean, talk about an absolute chaotic craziness that's going to give billions of dollars to the pharmaceutical industry. And then all you have to do is say, well, you know, it could jump from birds to humans. Now we got to vaccinate everybody. And then, and right now, as you know, next month, the World Health Organization is actually supposedly voting, or the votes are coming in, actually, from the nations of the world, whether, as a treaty, whether the national governments will cede their authority, will give their authority to the World Health Organization if the World Health Organization declares a pandemic. So all Bill Gates, who he controls the World Health Organization, all he has to do is say, okay, we've got a pandemic, everybody. Now every government in the world has to do whatever Bill Gates says. I mean, you know, you have enough money, you can definitely run the world. And I mean, I don't think he has the money. I think somebody, people above him that are richer than him, are telling him what to do. But basically, this is what's happening. This has happened. We're in that situation. So, if next month, if that actually, I don't think it will. I mean, I hope it doesn't. But if it does happen, then we're in a situation where it would not be difficult to create a fake pandemic, and then require everyone to be vaccinated with something that makes you sick, and then of course you say, well, that's we need drugs for that, and then anyone who refuses, of course, then they can decide what you have to do. You have to go to a camp. So, you know, we're talking about only a few short steps to the complete livestock situation of human beings if we are not proactive and resisting. I mean, really resisting, like really talking about only, you know, using cash. The germ theory is a total bollocks, as they say in England. It's all bollocks. It's all baloney. And, you know, our health, the terrain theory, you know, which is a much more holistic point of view, is that our health is a product of our being. It's our being. It's our food. It's our consciousness. It's our awareness. And, our relationships and so forth, and we're responsible for our own health, and we're not subject to contagion. I mean, that's a deadly lie that we still, most people are laboring under that, and I really think we need to have the courage to question these official narratives that have been programmed into us from the time we're little kids, and we talked about cooties. Oh, I'm going to give you cooties. I remember that as a kid.
Yeah.
And at one point, I remember when I was in my 20s, I rejected the germ theory. I said, I'm done with that. And it's so liberating. I mean, it's the greatest thing. So anyway, I think we're getting, let's see what time. Oh, we got a few minutes. Okay, 6:10. So we still have a few more minutes. Gino, do you have anything else? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one quick thing. I suggest that we sell so many of your books that you become a billionaire, and then we can start influencing in the right way.
Yeah, right.
That's my last take here.
Well, I hope I do a better job than Bill Gates.
You will, I promise.
All right, bless you. Thanks. Andy, yes.
Hi, I'm thrilled to hear all of this. I apologize, I was distracted, had 1,000 things to do, but I love listening. And I might have said this before, but because I'm praying that vegans wake up and get the message that, you know, this crazy pharma thing. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, so I even posted in the DXC Facebook group, and to the best of my knowledge, I did not get attacked for it. I think I posted there something like, and I try to say this to vegans all the time, is the way I discovered about animals and what goes on with them is I went to a dog show like 50 years ago, and there was a booth there, and they had pictures of all these dogs and cats and primates and other animals that had been tortured and murdered by big pharma. And so at that time, I was so grateful that they were educating me there. And it was my instant discovery and learning that big pharma is evil. Scientists are the most evil things in the world and never to be trusted. That's the feeling that I got. And then to discover that they're put up on a pedestal and being paid like billions of dollars to torture and murder innocent animals and to claim it's going to help humans. And it was just this whole feeling of I will never, ever, ever trust Big Pharma that moment on, I not only learned, you know, how I should stop causing it myself, what I was doing, but also I just started learning from all the other vegans at that time. But keep in mind, this was close to 50. Okay, for some reason, I think I'm getting low power here. But so that's what, it was other vegans that were teaching me about the evil of Big Pharma and to not trust them. And I'm like, so I just try to bring that up as much as possible, that Big Pharma is never to be trusted. And that I think you've said it also, is that years ago, vegans used to be healthy. But now with all the, you know, garbage food promoted, you know, there's even vegans not. But anyway, yeah, so I just, that's what I try to keep talking about is, you know, Big Pharma and scientists are all about torturing and murdering animals. And that's their main purpose. So I don't even have to say anything else about the vaccines. I just want to get people to think. Big Pharma is not to be trusted ever. So what are the alternatives then? Anyway, yeah. That's what I just wanted to throw out there. And thank you so much, and congratulations on your book. And, oh, so do you know when the a paperback or hardcover or something will come out?
I don't know for sure, but I think it's going to be pretty soon. I'll be getting my proof copy, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday next week. And then if I approve it, then I think it'll, after that, I think it'll be ready. So maybe next week or the week after anyway.
I'm wondering what you have to approve, because if they've already got it on Kindle.
I have to see the actual book. Yeah, it's the actual printed book. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, the Kindle, I've already approved the Kindle version. So you can get that. Yeah.
Okay.
That's approved. I have to approve the print version. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank
on
you.
On Amazon, it's showing me the paperback is available.
It says it's available?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, free delivery Sunday if I order. I mean, I already ordered the Kindle version, but.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I didn't even know that. I thought they would wait at least till I approved the how it looks. But
so you don't get it yet, but all everybody right. else can.
I thought Julie was saying that she thought that it said it, but that she then she couldn't access it. So
access it. It was delivered to my Kindle.
Yeah, the Kindle is definitely available, and the print version.
I mean, I talk about the book.
We'll see. Yeah. But the print version will be
available
soon. Yeah, but Kindle's definitely available. And I'm also having it, I'm self-publishing. The whole thing was going to be done by Vegan Publishers. And then there was this whole, I don't know if I told the whole story, but it was taking so long. And then I got, interested in doing it with another famous publisher, Skyhorse, which publishes all the Freedom books in New York City.
Oh,
and they were interested. They wanted to publish it. But then when they found out it was a total vegan book, like promoting veganism, then they pulled back. And so they were all into freedom, but they weren't into vegan freedom. So they published, you know, Robert F. Kennedy's books, all those books, Robert Malone, everybody. But so then they declined. So then I thought, all right, I'll do it myself. So now I'm self-published. I mean, it's Karuna. We've already published three other books, so this will be our fourth book, but it'll be the main one. So I'm doing it all kind of myself this time instead of going through a publisher. So it's a lot more work, but it seems to be going well. So thank you. Thanks for clarifying all that. And yeah, everything you said is really interesting, Andy, too, because the pharmaceutical industry should be understood by the vegan movement as probably the number one enemy. I've said that before here,
yeah.
Of the vegan movement, more than even the dairy and meat industries. I mean, Big Pharma has more money and power than any industry, and they have just enormous, and they hate veganism. I mean, they make all their money through selling drugs to animals, to people, so we should never be cooperating with them, because it's a Faustian bargain with them for sure. But Lisa, you had your hand up for quite a while, so you have something.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Tello. First of all, really, congratulations for just a long-awaited delivery of this baby.
Right, right.
Yeah, congratulations, and also congratulations to Madeline for beautiful cover. That's awesome. It's another apple. I can
right.
see the continuation of the theme.
Of the theme, right.
World Peace Diet, this is the brother.
Right.
World Peace Diet, they both have the apple. It's the good apple rather than the tech apple.
Right. It's the vegan apple.
The vegan apple, yeah. Yeah, I really want to really suggest to the group that all of us, should mastermind, brainstorm whatever ways we can help spread the word on this important book. I would definitely help suggest to Dr. Tuttle, maybe we could get the word out to all the vegan podcasters. Have you, Dr. Tuttle, interview with any vegan podcaster about the book and, you know, get the word out? First of all, World Peace Diet Facebook group, have you announced it yet?
No, I haven't. Yeah, it's all very fresh. You know, it just went out yesterday, so.
Dr. Tuttle, let's do that, have that, announcement. You make the announcement and then we all can share your, that post and all over. Let's blow out the internet with that. I think
great.
That,
yeah, that's a good idea. I think you know, there's quite a few people who are will help support it. I think World Peace Diet group and other people. So thank you. Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll make the announcement and encourage people to buy the Kindle version right away, which I know is available. I'm not sure about the print one, but. That's the easy, and leave reviews. So, yeah, if you can spread the word, if anyone can spread the word, your group, and I think it's okay if it's controversial. I mean, you know, it's going to be some more controversial in a way, but, you know.
I'm sure it's controversial. We're already mentally prepared that it's controversial.
Yeah.
But I think we ought to mobilize the whole vegan world to be aware of it. Whether which side they are on, I mean, they need to have a look at it and make up their mind or change their mind, whatever position there is. So I think what I thought of right away is to, like what I did with you, Dr. Tuttle, with the when you did the vegan summit, the worldwide vegan summit,
right.
In 2021, I helped you send out mass emails to all the vegan podcasters, and then they interview you, and then that got the buzz going, and I think is that something you were open to do?
Yeah, definitely. I think it'd be great to do more, to do some interviews about it now that it's really ready. I was never sure how long it was going to take, but they did it. Amazon did it faster than I thought. They really moved on it. Ingram is the other main, and they're taking a little longer, but Amazon really went quickly. So, so we can move forward on that. Definitely.
Yeah,
you can definitely come on the Vegan Posse and talk about it. That would be
oh, good.
That would be a self-love interview with you, but we'll definitely do a regular interview too.
Okay.
Victoria Moran is also plugging a new book, so she's doing exactly the same thing, you know, looking for.
Oh, is she? Uh huh.
Yeah.
Good.
All right, Chrissy, you'd be the first one.
Yeah, that'd be great. We can do one. Yeah, if anyone has any ideas, just let me know.
Okay, so that's that for the exciting, the positive energy ones. But I got another down one. really bother me. Just the other day, I listened to a video where Dr. Vernon Coleman.
Yes.
Anyone, you recognize him?
Yeah, I know. Vernon Coleman. Yeah.
Vernon Coleman, he's been also very, very vocal about all the development of the pandemic all throughout. And he made one video that really got me so bothered, disturbed about euthanasia. In UK, I don't know about here, but he's saying that the doctors and nurses are easily suggesting euthanasia, convincing people to kill themselves, to commit suicide, whether you're old people or have not just fatal terminal disease, but just as simple as diabetes and depression and even kids who vocalize that they, even though they are not, don't mean it, they would say, oh, I want to die or something, then they would go ahead and suggest to the kids to kill themselves without their parental consent, or just euthanasia, suicide by doctor, making it legalized in all these European countries and some states in U.S. It just got me thinking, boy, just only a few years ago, we were talking about the Dr. Corfian, right? Cook. What's his name? The doctor who helped people, die peacefully.
Kevorkian?
Kevorkian, yeah.
Kevorkian, yeah. I mean, that was a big issue, and here this makes it legal and so easy, and even they're pushing the idea that you should die.
I'll just say a couple of words. You know, I think, Dr. Vernon Coleman, he's been around a long time, and I really respect him. He's a vegan also. And I think he's making a very good point. Canada has already passed legislation to encourage people to commit suicide as a way to, to try to really ramp it up to get a lot more people, dying that way, committing suicide. Offering it as like in suicide hotlines, instead of trying to get them not to commit suicide, say, well, why don't you go to the local hospital and they can painlessly kill you, and then there it is, you take care of solve all your problems. So they're really encouraging it in Canada, and also according to him, as you're saying, in England, and I think in other countries as well. It's a new movement to change, like a lot of things that were always considered evil, like you're killing yourself, or like pedophilia. Both of those are being very consciously, like from the very highest levels with lots of money and power, it's rolled out. This is what we're doing. This is the new narrative. The narrative now is that people who want to have sex with children, they're called minor attracted people, and it's considered a totally valid thing. It's just, if, as long as the child consents, then go ahead. And it's really got a lot of, money and power behind it, and laws are, being changed and so forth to do that. It's a battle. Right here in California, there's a Republican congressman who tried to pass a law saying that it's a felony to have sex with a child. And that law is not, the Democrats are just like tearing that law. It's not getting out of committee. They're finding ways to, well, I don't know about that. I mean, there might be times when it's okay. So, anyway, but the same thing with euthanasia or killing oneself. I mean, I think there are times perhaps when it might be justified. You know, it's an ethical question if one's in a really hopelessly terrible situation. But to kind of be encouraging it now is something that's, is a new thing. And then the other thing that's being encouraged also, interestingly enough, besides, eating bugs, is eating humans. You know, cannibalism is now also, being talked about. There's scientists who are promoting the idea of cannibalism as a way to feed a hungry world, as a way to combat global warming, as a valid way. You know, this is something we should really entertain. We have all these people that are, we're euthanizing them. It's too bad to just let it go to waste. I mean, we could cook and eat these people, right? I mean, why not? Why waste the resources?
If companies get into the lab-grown meat,
right,
then there's no reason they couldn't, you know, cultivate human cells.
Human flesh, right.
And that would be the most bioavailable, you know, flesh for us to incorporate into our flesh because it's the most
right. Animal. Yeah, but these are all ways of attacking the vegan message of kindness and compassion and respect for the sacredness of all life. And it's a satanic agenda, but it's the same thing, but you know, animal agriculture is also a satanic agenda. I mean, it's the same thing. It's treating beings as objects. It's using others for one's own benefit. And when you have a herding culture, when you have too many animals, you've got to cull the herd. You know, there's too many of them. They're too expensive. They're too hard to control. That's what it is. I mean, you know, there's too many humans. We don't need all these humans. The World Economic Forum has been talking about this for years. And what are we going to do with all these people? You know, they have no respect for humanity, human beings as individuals. They see us as consumers or as workers. And we don't need the workers. We don't need the consumers. So what are we going to do with all these people? I mean, they're talking about that very clearly. Are we just going to entertain them with computer games? Or what are we going to do with all these people? So, these are the people who have the money who are actually making the policies, who control governments. And that's why these laws are going into effect, and that's why the media is not questioning any of it. So it's really up to us in the vegan movement, which is really about respecting the sacredness of all life, human life and non-human, all life, and celebrating the beauty of life, to not comply with any of this and to offer the alternative, which is compassion and respect for our lives. I mean, that's the big problem. When people eat animal foods, you know, every day eating terror and fear and pain and eating the narrative of wasting life, you know, it's just a chicken, you don't care about them, then those people are easily programmed to think that their life really isn't worth much. You know, that's a big problem. Because they treat others as their lives aren't worth much, and so that sows the seed for the same thing to happen. And then we find ourselves now having these authority figures telling us, your life really isn't worth much. You know, why don't we go ahead and pull the plug on you? We have a drug here that'll just take care of it right away. So, you know, this is, it's horrible. I wish we didn't have to talk about it, but like Dr. Vernon Coleman is saying, we have to be aware that this is actually being enacted as policy, and we have to be aware and not just try to hide from this. We have to see that this is happening, but then create a positive response. And that's the thing. So creating this positive response to me is just continuing to spread the vegan message and work as best we can, each in our own unique way, to help create a positive future. For our children at least, and for ourselves. It looks like we're at our time here too. Madeline, are you there? I want to thank all of you. I know this has been a little difficult to have these conversations, but thank you, Lisa, for bringing that up. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Chrissy. Thank you, Gino. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, everyone, for your ideas and sharing your thoughts and questions and so forth. The underlying principles don't change. You know, the underlying truths don't change. There's one life living through all of us, and it's a light. It's beauty and love and kindness and caring and understanding that this life is one of many. So, for this life, you know, here we are. We have our opportunities, and we can respond. So let's say our prayer together. And remember, just so I probably won't say it at the end, we have, in May, we have our two. So we have the first Thursday and the third Thursday. And we'll stay in touch by email. I'll let you know any new things with the new book also. And thank you all so much for your support. I saw that some of you are even buying it at the full price. So bless you. Thank you so much for your generosity. Appreciate that. And now we can say our prayer together, which I think we all know. And you can feel free to unmute yourselves so we can make a glorious cacophony of vegan, compassionate voices here. Here we go. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Good, again. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. That's the truth. Absolutely, yes. Let's say it one more time with feeling. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. So it is. Much love. Go forth and multiply and live the message. Thanks again. Stay in touch. Bless you all. Thanks so much.
We can have a worldwide book launch party on Facebook group.
Okay. Yeah. Talk about it. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Wonderful.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Love you.
Love you.
All right. Thumbs up.